All right. Welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are live here on, it's February 21st, 2019. We're just a little bit early. Usually we start around, you know, 1 or 2 minutes past the hour, but the music is over, and why not? We can go ahead and reward those who got on the call a little early. You don't have to wait so long. And I'm sure maybe a few more people will be joining us in the next couple of minutes. But we're just, I can't say something like chomping at the bit, like chomping on the carrot maybe, ready to jump in here. And just sending all our love to you all from me and from Madeline. We're in Florida. So now we're on the Eastern time zone. Last month we were in Sedona, as you may remember. I can kind of barely remember. It was seems like a long time ago, but we were in Sedona at the for the Sedona Veg Fest in January, and now here we are in Umatilla, Florida, which is where my sister lives. We just gave a lecture last night in Ocala. So we're talking about basically kind of central, north central Florida. Beautiful area, actually, very rural. Lots of springs here. And my wonderful sister, Laura, is a longtime vegan now. She's really stuck with it after all these years. And my mother is here visiting. My mother lives about a half an hour away, something like that. And she's been here the whole week. We arrived on Monday, so now it's Thursday. We're leaving tomorrow. And we'll be taking my mother back to her retirement community. She lives in a retirement community for Christian missionaries, which is about, maybe 40 minutes from here. And then we'll go on. We'll be giving a lecture tomorrow night at the Loving Hut in Tampa. So it's really been a whirlwind tour the last few weeks since we landed in Atlanta, and it's been great. So I'll talk a little more about that maybe in a few minutes after we have a special guest, our good friend and colleague Philip Nikozisis, who's with us on the call. So I'd like to welcome all of you now. Now we're at 2 minutes past the hour, so now I think we're kind of filling up. And this is great. We're really honored to be able to share some words and thoughts and feelings and inspirations and information and concerns and joys, whatever comes to us. And of course, feel free to ask any questions. That's part of the whole purpose of this, is an opportunity to have all your, as the joke goes, have all your answers questioned, and hopefully have some of your questions answered, maybe, or some of your questions just remaining as questions. Maybe we can go deeper with the questions. Most questions when it comes to veganism are open-ended, and there's many levels of meaning. And one of the things I don't like to do is stop the questioning process, because that's how we grow and learn, is to keep questioning. All right. So I hope you can hear me okay. I'm using my little earpiece. If the volume or whatever isn't all that good, just press star 6 and unmute yourself and let me know. Otherwise, I'll continue like this. So what we usually like to do at the very beginning is spend a couple of minutes or so, not too long, just in a kind of a meditation that we prepare for the time that we have together. So let's go ahead and do that now. Wherever you happen to be, if you're in a place where you can easily turn your attention within, let's do that. And take a moment and feeling our connection that we have with each other, more than just the thoughts that we're sharing, but also the feelings and the commitment that we share, which is so precious. The commitment to caring for the welfare of all living beings, the commitment to helping to build a more kind, loving, and just society and world, and to being a voice for animals and a voice for those who are abused and for future generations and for ecosystems So we just give thanks for each other, for every precious being who's on this call, knowing that we're on this call because we're called. And it's a calling from our heart to penetrate more deeply into the mystery of how we can be effective as advocates, how we can live our life authentically, how we can respond from our highest position internally to the challenges that we face living in a world that's organized around killing and imprisoning and abusing millions of animals every day, literally every minute. How do we respond to this effectively? How can we give our gifts and share our insights and whatever capacities that we have? And we give thanks to all the animals who give so much of themselves, literally everything. And many of the animals have become our teachers in certain ways, and they are our teachers. And we give thanks for them and for the human animals who are also our teachers. There's many humans who are helping us to question the official stories in our society and to inspire us to actions that can help bring liberation to animals and to all living beings. So we give thanks to all the teachers in our lives, the whole web of life here, the beautiful earth, the beautiful ecosystems, the fragile beauty of the flowering of life here, and the immense intelligence that permeates everything, the immense intelligence that permeates our own being. We may connect with this intelligence, the cognitive intelligence, the creative intelligence, the emotional intelligence, the social intelligence that's always available. And we give thanks also to all the efforts that everyone is making in so many different ways, and for the massive expansion of the vegan movement to include so many different dimensions of life. We see this happening all around us, the expansion of the vegan movement. And it's becoming pervasive in a very positive way. And finally, we give thanks knowing that all of the ripples that radiate out into the infinite web of relations from our being together this evening will be ripples to bring greater freedom and peace and abundance and joy and liberation and happiness and love and wisdom into the web of relations here, our relationship with each other, with the animals, and with our own inner being. It's all interconnected. All right, so thank you very much, all of you, for joining us on the call. And here we are. Now we're back, and I think basically we all have a gift. Each one of us, I feel, has a gift that we can bring to the movement. And let me see here. I'm going to, okay. And so I'd like to go ahead and introduce Philip. I'm just a little bit concerned right now, just speaking here, because I'm not getting a response from my computer program that things are really working. Oh, now I am getting that response. Okay, that's good. All right, so sorry for the distraction, but I was just suddenly didn't see my volume level moving at all, but now it's moving, so I'm assuming that it's been going on okay here. All right, good. Sometimes, you know, we go into meditation and it's like the whole world sort of stops happening, and we come back and we, oh, what's happening here? Are the bank's still open and everything? But anyway, okay, so I'll go ahead and introduce our friend Philip. Madeline is not right with me here like sometimes she is, I guess probably because we only have a few days here with Laura and her husband Kevin and my mother, Beverly, And so she's taking some time with them right now while I'm here with you all, which is great. And so she's not with, but she really wanted me to say that she sends her love to everybody, and we send our appreciation, of course, to all of you. And to Philip. So Philip Nikazisis is just a terrific person, a great friend of ours, who we've gotten to know better as time has gone on, because we've done two journeys together over the last couple of years, one to India and one to Eastern Europe to help spread the vegan message. Philip has also been, he's a World Peace Diet facilitator, went through the training that we did in on the Big Island in Hawaii a few years ago, and went on to do a whole year, actually, living in a different country for 1 month as part of a program which he will, I think, explain to us. And then he's written a book. He's been working hard on a book that tells some of the insights from this experience, which he is launching very soon. And we met Philip through Hippocrates Health Institute, which is in West Palm Beach, Florida, so it's just a few hours south of here where we are right now. And we will be arriving there on Monday for several days, and we'll be giving a lecture at Hippocrates. He has gone through Hippocrates himself through their professional training programs, which is really an excellent training program. So he's a certified, not only a World Peace Diet facilitator, but also a Hippocrates health educator. And so he really knows a lot about nutrition, about the healing power of food. And he's helping us with several other events in South Florida as well. So I really am delighted that Philip is joining us on the call to share some of his insight and his enthusiasm and his awareness with all of us, because I know it's so helpful to get his perspective and to understand how we can be more effective as advocates in the world. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute Philip's phone here, and here we go. So Philip, can you hear me okay?
Good evening from Palm Beach, Florida. How is everybody? How are you, Will?
Great.
Can you hear me okay?
Can hear your voice.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Very well. Yeah. Comes through loud and clear.
Awesome.
Good. So,
how do you like our weather here in Florida? How do you like our weather?
Yeah. The weather is just, I'm really amazed how warm it is and how beautiful it is. Really, where we are, it's been in the 70s and 80s, and we've been swimming every day. It's so beautiful. Yeah, it's really warm. I can't believe we're in the middle of February and it's this warm, but this is great. Yeah.
Well, you know, rest up pretty good, because when you get here next week, we're going to put you to work pretty good.
Right. Well,
rest up.
We're kind of
rest
that,
up there. Yeah. I know.
Thanks so much for joining us. So, everyone, this is, as I said, this is Philip, and can you tell us a little bit, Philip, just a little bit about the program you were on for the last year, and also about your project that you're working on, and anything else you think would be interesting to other World Peace Diet facilitators and facilitators in training, because you know who we all are.
Great. You know, I feel like a mosquito in a nudist colony. It's like, I don't know where to begin, but I will begin. So, you know, I got to say, I a little bit of background. Dr. Will, I heard you speak at the Real Truth About Health conference about 5 years ago. And up till then, I was, a nutritional vegan. It was all about me. It was all about, you know, restoring my health and being, have most optimal health that's possible. And then I heard you speak, and then I was like, all right, well, now I'm never going to be tempted by animal foods again, because it's really not about me. It's about what kind of world we want to live in. So, then I started listening to your calls, and I was like, gosh, if I was ever one of the guest call-in speakers, I'll really make it in life. If I was ever one of those guys, I really, would make it. But And so, you know, when I say it's an honor, and I've listened to many of your guests, and they're all so wonderful, and I hope that I can help to share something maybe that they hadn't heard of or thought of before. And, you know, so when I say I'm honored to be on your call, understand that, you know, for 5 years now, I've been listening to these calls thinking, gosh, if you make it on this call, you've really made it in life. So that's how I feel right now.
Wow. Wow. You deserve it. I really feel that.
Thank you. Here's the deal. Last year I was on a program called Remote Year. And Remote Year is a company that I paid money to. And there was 48 other people I didn't know on day one. And we spent a year. You can check it out on remoteyear.com. All of us had our own companies or worked for other companies. And we lived in one city per month. I was in 12 cities in 12 months on 4 continents and 10 countries. And so my business is commercial real estate. And I've been doing it so long that, you know, I was able to operate it for a while. Even before I left, I was able to operate my business remotely. And so what I did was, and this band of travelers, digital nomads, were a traveling family. They became the Tramley. And, you know, I had roommates for the first time in decades, and many of them, actually every roommate apartment I had in the 12 months agreed to keep vegan, keep the household vegan. There was only one or two vegans besides me that were vegan to begin with, but, you know, it's all about sharing. It's all about, so besides my business that was able to operate remotely, I used the platform to share the vegan message, as you know. And Will, you and Madeline and I have, including the United States, have been in 10 countries, I counted, sharing the vegan message. So it's a blessing that we're able to do that. And I've got some stories. So it's like I used to, before I left on this trip, as you know, I would give talks at Hippocrates, I give talks at local libraries, I've been to California and Vegas. I would always give like a brain dump on, you know, nutrition and heart disease and what animals do versus what plants do. And now, like with the World Peace Diet, it's like, you know, it's really nice to get, some people really want to get detailed and wonky with the facts, but it's really about, you know, for me now, it's about storytelling, and that's what compelled me to write this book. The book is called Have Laptop, Will Travel, and it has very strong vegan themes. I didn't try to write a vegan book, but if you're traveling the world as a vegan, guess what? It's gonna be there, you know, and that's what happened. So it's gonna be out in about 2 weeks on Amazon. I'm recording the audio book right now, and Will, you have written, you know, what is people have considered one of the most important books of the last 100 years, and so you've written a book, you know what it's like. I can tell you, it's my first book, it's the closest thing any man will ever get to childbirth.
Right.
It's really good. It's really good something.
Good for you. Wow. So you've got the book written and now you're gonna actually launch it soon, right?
Yes. Yeah, So here's the thing. In about 2 weeks, it'll be live on Amazon, and I'm very happy to say that 10% of the proceeds, the gross proceeds, not the net. Sometimes charities play games a little bit. Not that they're bad. I'm just saying, I'm just taking 10% off the top. I'm giving it to a charity that really touched my heart when I was in Thailand, and called the Wildflower Home. It's a shelter for young mothers who get pregnant in the village there in northern Thailand. We were in Chiang Mai, which has a big expatriate community, also a great vegan community. And instead of giving a presentation or a lecture, I ended up going there and helping with some light construction projects, if you can believe it. I'm not the handiest guy with my hands, but by the second or maybe it was the third time, I was like shoveling gravel, you know, doing stuff. And I saw the young mothers cooking their mung beans. And so, as you know about Hippocrates Health Institute, where I'm a health educator, everything is raw. And the reason why it's raw, and trust me, I love cooked food around the world. In some places, you have to eat cooked food, as you know, because of the bacteria, right? But right. I went to the head nun, and it was run by the Catholic Church. And, you know, these are the kind of places and the kind of things, these shelters, you don't see in the news. You see the stuff, the scandalous stuff about the Catholic Church. I'm not Catholic, so I'm not pushing them. I'm just saying, you know, this is kind of like the unsung work that gets done day in, day out, these shelters. And they house these women. They give them skills. They teach them farming. So on the third day, I said to the head nun, I said, you know, I see you guys cooking the mung beans. I told her about my background and my experience at Hippocrates Health Institute, where they teach people to, you know, switch to a plant-based lifestyle to hopefully halt, reverse, and resolve catastrophic diseases, helping people help themselves, essentially. I said, can I hold a sprout workshop and for the young mothers? And so she said, sure. So then the next day there I was, you know, in a tuk-tuk. You know what a tuk-tuk is? One of those little three-wheeler motorcycle things. I wasn't driving it. It was like a taxi, like a little go-kart taxi through Old City, Chiang Mai. I found a plastics superstore, like this like two-story store that just had nothing but like Tupperware type things, and actually found some easy sprouters, if you know what those look like. They sit like on the kitchen counter. Then I had to go get sprouts, so I found some trial and error, and I finally found a market. I bought some mung beans and some lentils and even some almonds. And so then I went and I taught them how to sprout, which is very simple. It never occurred to them, Will, not to cook the mung beans. It only occurred to them to cook the mung beans. And so I wasn't sure if they actually like understood it or enjoyed it or really cared. And then I was long gone from Thailand, actually. Then we went to Malaysia. That was a whole other thing. And this is all in my book, by the way. I get an instant message from the head nun with a big bowl of sprouts. She was taking a picture of lunch from that day, a big photo. And it wasn't like a little one. This could have fed the entire village, I'm telling you. And, you know, I got really choked up, like, wow, these, you know. The one thing I kept saying, which I think sunk in, was I kept saying, high nutrition, low cost for the children. High nutrition, low cost for the children. Because as you know, sprouts are, you know, the most nutritious food this side of heaven. They're like baby trees. They have all the intelligence of the bigger plant. Right. So I kept saying high nutrition, low cost for the children. And you know, a couple of weeks later, I got that picture, and that was that really touched my heart. And you know, it's amazing. We could talk all night about why those girls are there and the situations, and they're not just escaping, you know, domestic violence situations, but in a rural village that's actually it's close to Myanmar, used to be Burma, all the way there up there in the north of Thailand. If you become pregnant and you're not married, it's considered, it's not like it's pure, like the puritanical culture here where it's like scorned. No, it's considered bad luck, and the village elders will kick you out of the village because it's bad luck to the village. So then they come to the shelter and they learn some skills. They have their baby, and enough time will pass that then it's not bad luck anymore, and then they'll accept them back into the village. So as you can imagine, a couple of the boys there, you know, needed a father figure. Like as soon as they saw like an older man, they just like run right up to you and like grab your leg, and you have to walk with a kid hanging on your leg. You know, they won't let you go. And so it really touched my heart to be able to discover that place. And gosh, whatever money comes from this project, besides sharing the vegan message, and if I can sell some books here, and you know, 10% off the top is going to go to the Wildflower Home in Chiang Mai. So that's the story with what happened there. So sounds great.
Wow,
right?
Thanks. Yeah, I think you're right though. Sprouts are something that's really overlooked. You know, I think in many cases we forget that you can, you know, very inexpensively buy clover seeds,
yes.
alfalfa seeds, beans, different various beans. And instead of just, you know, cooking them is one thing, it's fine, but like you say with mung beans, but if you sprout them, it only takes, you know, several days, and you've just, you know, tripled their size and made all the nutrients bioavailable, and it's got a lot of fiber, and,
correct.
You know, so they, it's really a great thing. I mean, teaching sprouting, it would be such a terrific adjunct, I think, to everything else that we're doing, to add that on, you know, the benefits
yes.
of sprouting. We've been doing it, you know, in our RV for years, and I don't think about it that much anymore, but I kind of take it for granted. But I know most people don't eat sprouts,
yep.
and it's just such a, like you say, it's such a complete food with vitamins, proteins, everything is right there, and nature just does its thing, and it's...
nature
it's
does its thing,
little,
you know?
Yeah, it has very little, you know, very reason, little reason not to do it. It's just people don't do it. We're not taught to. We're just not taught to do it.
We're not taught to.
Yeah.
You know, Brian Clement, who is the director at Hippocrates, likes to say that we could solve world hunger overnight just by, you know,
mm-hmm.
you could, in impoverished areas, you could drop a big sack of sprouts. And,
mm-hmm.
and the reason, now, we could talk all day, all night, you actually can get a doctorate in nutrition, but... At Hippocrates, what they tell us, they give us a simple acronym, which the listeners can also hear and remember, which is HOPE. The raw food has hormones, oxygen, phytonutrients, and enzymes. HOPE.
Right.
So hormones, oxygen, phytonutrients, and enzymes. And our body thrives on those things. And unfortunately, and you know, listen, if we could, if everybody was vegan and we would argue how best to be a healthy vegan, that's like my heaven, right? So you know, the truth is though, when you cook when you cook the food, you lose hope, you lose HOPE. When you cook the food, the smell of, when you walk into a house and you smell food cooking, that's the oxygen leaving the food. And so I'm not raw vegan. I'm like, I like to tell people, I'm a vegan, not a saint, and I eat cooked food. But today, you know, I live 9 miles from Hippocrates Health Institute. They have a wonderful 3-week program that anybody on any 52 Sundays a year, you can go and check in for 3 weeks. You can stay on campus. I live 9 miles from there, as you know. And today, it's kind of like a country club. For us locals, it's like a country club without the golf. You know, I went there today and I took my, it's all about sharing the vegan. Like, there's many ways, like you said, we can share the vegan message. My cousin was in town with his 2 young girls. And on the way to the airport, I picked them up an hour earlier. We went to Hippocrates for lunch, and my cousin Jimmy was thanking me. He's like, thank you so much because of my, for his children, like planting the seed, excuse the pun, but, you know, we all, there's yeah. all things we can do. And like you've said in your talks, any vegan really is a teacher and an activist. It just, it can come out in different ways. We all have talents. We all have skills. And you know, sometimes it seems like we're in a world that's just so against everything that we stand for. But, you know, we have to be, if we're warriors, we have to be happy warriors. That's my view.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's a great way to have food that is delicious and nutritious, like you're talking about. And we're similar. We're not 100% obviously raw. I think having quite a lot of uncooked food, maybe half to 2/3. Anyway, it's really a fantastic foundation for just feeling great, and it's quite often it's less expensive, and it's something we can do ourselves, especially sprouting. You know, it's easy to do. You can buy sprout mixes, and that are all, you know, we have this company where we live that offers an Italian mix, a French mix, a Russian mix, and different mixes and of different seeds. So they're really delicious, or just, you know, straight different like sunflower seeds, but whatever. But yeah, we'll be in Hippocrates in a few days, and for those of you who haven't been there, it's really got a beautiful history and example of healing people. I remember talking to some really famous. Actually, I interviewed some people, you know, well-known people. The woman, I can't think of her name right this second. She was married to Paul McCartney for a while. And she had this...
I forget her name.
You know who I mean, but yeah, she's a famous vegan athlete woman, and British, and but she was, you know, she was the typical example. She had absolutely, the medical establishment had given up on her. She had some kind of disease that was completely debilitating. She just went to Hippocrates and ate a lot of sprouts and really good healthy vegan food, and she was completely, not only was her body healed, but she got right deeply into the power of foods. And what I really like, and maybe you can say a few words about it, is that what you're doing is you're bringing actually to Hippocrates the World Peace Diet, and that peace, right, the World Peace Diet message there too, helping to do that. And I think that's really helpful.
Thank you. Yes, actually, I have two signature presentations that I give to the health educators, and you're here this time as, oh, they don't know it, but I'll tell them. You're, one of the things that you're doing here is you're going to spend time with the health educators who are here for a 9-week course. And when you're not here, I do, you know, a version of the World Peace Diet, Big Ideas. And, you know, 64 years Hippocrates has been in operation. Hundreds of thousands of people have gone through their life transformation program, right? But it never, there was never this component about the bigger ideas and the consequences of our food choices besides our physical health. And that's one of the things I love about you and also Brian is that you guys, you are open to people's ideas. I told Brian, you know, this is, you're talking about health all the time, but you're not talking about, you know, some of the spiritual aspects or the historical or the bigger picture. And he said, well, then he turned around and said, well, then do you want to teach a class on that? and so, you know, that's one of the things I've really learned from the leaders in this movement, like you guys, is you're really servants first. And I will say this too. I've been now, we've done 10 countries, and within those countries, we've done many cities traveling together, Will. I can't keep up with you guys. I don't know how. I mean, I thought I was in pretty good shape. You know, I'm a vegan. I'm not perfect, but you guys really you really have a good energy that sustains you, and it's largely plant powered, but obviously there's a lot of loving spiritual life force, you know, that goes along with the plant power.
Yeah, that's the secret. The secret ingredient there, I think. Right.
Yeah.
So, it's so important. You're right. It's so important for people to understand that eating healthy food is really critical. I mean, it's really so important on every level for us, physical health and all that. But taking time to meditate and cultivate ourselves is so essential. So
one thing I learned. Yeah, one thing I thought I've been thinking about that you had mentioned along the way is, you know, I've spoken to, you know, I guess it's thousands of people, and including the countries I've been to with you. I've done countries on my own, like I said, which is the book has tells a lot of stories about my vegan travels, and so I think you've covered this before, but now it's really, really coming home to me, which is after talking to so many people about vegan, who's the one person we can change? And that's ourselves. I've actually felt like I've learned that the hard way, because, you know, when you travel for a year, you're away from home. I've sustained, you know, a broken foot, broken phones, broken relationships, you know, just things haven't always been perfect. And you just like forget, like you think, like you said, like, people think, oh, I'm vegan now, I'm okay. Well, you know what? That's just the beginning, right?
Right. That's so true.
It's just the beginning.
Yeah, it's the beginning of the adventure, of a whole new adventure. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep. No, sorry. Go ahead, Will. Sorry.
I was just going to say, can you just tell people, so you gave, besides traveling with us through Eastern Europe and in India, like the last couple of years, on your own, you started giving your own lectures, not only here, but like you did some in Japan and quite a few other places.
Yes.
Right? You learned quite a bit from that, I'm sure. Presenting.
Yeah.
Meeting.
So when I, after Thailand, I went, like I said, we spent 5 weeks in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and our friend in India, Shankar, referred me to this nice physician named Dr. Vithi. He's a general practitioner, and every new patient he gets, they have to sit through a 10-minute plant-based talk from the doctor about, you know, you don't get that for most medical doctors, right? But he's one of the special ones. Well, he vetted me on YouTube. He saw some of my lectures on YouTube, and Shankar, our friend, gave a good recommendation. So then he put me to work, and that was the month that I felt like I became a vegebrity, a vegan celebrity, because I almost felt like you guys, right? And I did five of they set up five events for me. One of them was in Kathmandu, Nepal. They flew me 5 hours to Kathmandu, which I'd never been to before. Have you ever been there?
Right. No, I've never been there. Madeline has, but I haven't.
Yeah, you know, it's famous. It's also the birthplace of Buddha, and it's also, you know, it's the base for mountain climbing and, of course, Mount Everest. But you know, I spoke there at the Asian Pacific Vegetarian Conference, and there are people from all over Asia, and they've invited us. We're trying to coordinate that now, as you know, to speak with them at their next conference. But one thing that's in my book, it's just a little story I'll tell you, is after we gave the lecture, I was the keynote speaker, and then the next day, well, there was a party that night, and then the next day was a farewell party. And one of the things, this is not actually my story, but I have to say, there was so much dancing food. They were literally dancing on the tables. They were singing songs. They were having a ball, all without alcohol. And I thought that that was really special. Like, in the United States, you really wouldn't dream of hosting a dinner party or a cocktail party without, you know, cocktails or at least wine. And I found it really refreshing in Malaysia and, in this case, in Nepal, people really, you know, having wonderful fellowship. That's really what it is. That's in one word. I don't want to call it partying. I'm going to call it fellowship. They were dancing. They were singing. Laughing and eating. I think a few of them forgot to shower, but that's a different conversation. But okay, so here's what I wanted to say about it. So I'm leaving Kathmandu, Nepal, and I'm on the airplane, and all of a sudden, and we're on the runway, all of a sudden I hear this explosion. And I thought it was our plane, like maybe our plane engine had exploded. And we didn't know, I knew something was very wrong. And I looked out the window and there was a crash landing. And, and the plane, and so we were grounded on the tarmac for 4 hours. And it's so unlike America. The captain came out, the captain's giving me briefings on like what the air traffic control was saying, you know, like, well, the information was just flying so freely, like, that's not at all how we do things in America, right? Mm-hmm. And he said that we were a little late. What happened was the plane, 70 people were on a turbo commuter plane, and it crash landed. It came in the wrong way. It came in the wrong direction. It followed the wrong orders, and the wheels of the plane clipped the fence. And then it clipped the fence, and then they crash landed. 40 people out of the 70 people died. And because we were there for so long on the tarmac, he opened the door for air. I stood out there. I saw, you know, I saw just something that really disturbed me. They were carrying, you know, it quickly became a recovery operation instead of a rescue operation. And it just really, there were things, I was like, wanted to get back to Malaysia. Then I got mad at myself for being so selfish. These people had just died, and their families were going to be devastated. And it made me really think and take an inventory about, you know, about how precious life is, how, like you say, whether we perish, God forbid, that way, or we live a nice long life, 100 years old, and we die in our sleep. We're here for a very short time, right?
Either way, right, yeah. So you really get the, I felt that. Yeah. Right. The transiency. Yeah.
Yeah, I called my parents from the plane. I had was wavering between one bar and no bars. You know, and I called my parents. I said, I'm okay, but this is what happened. My mom's like, you need to come home now. This trip around the world is gone on too long.
Too
so anyway, but I, but I had three more lectures, in Malaysia, including the island of Penang, and the Malaysian people are special. They're a young country. It's a mix. That's a whole other, I go into it in my book, the ethnic mix and, the vegan, listen, I think what I want to say about all this is my travels around the world. The vegan movement is younger than some other places, but it's fledgling more than some other places, but it's definitely here to stay. And it's not going
right.
Anywhere. It's only, like you said, it's only getting bigger and bigger. And a lot of it, actually, you know, it's not even new. Like I spent 90 days in Asia. I could go anywhere in Asia and not look at a menu in the restaurant and just say, please bring me the Buddhist meal.
Wow.
I love that. That what that told me, they were teaching me. You know, they were teaching me that this is just, you know, just the old way that was lost for the reasons that you talk about in your book. And I just love that. I just felt like I was tapping back into, you know, in some of the wisdom of humanity that humanity already
right.
has set up for us, right?
Right, exactly. And then just making it more relevant for people today. That's really what it is.
Right.
Yeah, so what can we do to support you in your launch of this book? Can you tell us, what the next steps are? Are you going to be doing?
Yeah.
We should probably go on to some other things. But what would be, can you, tell us what we can do? It's going to be on Amazon, so you want some reviews maybe?
Yep.
Or?
Yeah. So what I'm going to do is when it's live, I'm going to post the link, the Amazon link, if that's okay. I'm going to post it on the World Peace Diet page. And, sure, I would. The publisher, I have a publisher out of Los Angeles. They have a strategy where it's called a soft launch, where it's electronic only, and they ask you to get friends and family to give 5 stars and maybe quickly review the book, and then they'll do the hard launch I'm
great.
I'm just ready to just put it out there and let it take its, let it have the wings that it's supposed to have. Have Laptop Will Travel, Memoirs of a Digital Nomad, 12 Cities in 12 Months.
That's it. Okay. Have Laptop Will Travel by Philip Nicozisis. I'll send my, I'll send to everybody who's on the call. I'll send out that title. And do you already have a link on Amazon at this point?
No. Because it's not live yet. There's no link.
Right. Okay.
I wish I did, but I'll post it.
All right.
I'll put it on your. I'll email you and post it on the thing.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
So thank you for everything. Look forward to seeing you farther south when you head to Florida here, and
next week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. All right, Philip. Thanks so much for joining us, and. Stay on the call. If anyone has any questions or comments about anything that Philip's been talking about, you'd like clarification or just want to contribute something, press star 6. Remember, press star 6 is the way we raise our hand here. And we're always happy to continue the dialogue that way. But I think this sounds like a very interesting book, and I know with all the stories you have accumulated, it will be fascinating, and how you were able to bring the vegan message to people in all these different countries and learn so much from the people and share. You know, it sounds fantastic, really. Oh, and there's there is one person raising their hand, Lily. I'll go ahead and invite Lily to make a comment here.
Hi, Will. Hi,
yeah.
Philip. Oh, I'm just so inspired by you and. You know, I came to veganism through the World Peace Diet, read it 12 years ago, And if it hadn't been for the spiritual component and the ethical component that Will just imbues the book with, I would never have gone vegan because I didn't think it was really that healthy. But you're talking about the sprouts. Really, I'm so inspired by that because I used to do sprouts. You know, in the 60s, I used to do sprouts, but I stopped doing them. And I thank you for reminding me of that. And you are so full of good energy. It's just a pleasure to hear you. And I just wish you well and just beautiful. Just really, really beautiful. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
There.
Thank you very much.
Philip. I wish you well in your travels and have laptop will travel, right?
That's
God
much
bless
better
you,
than remember
you.
The old. I think that's a takeoff on. I was trying to explain it to Madeline.
Have gun will travel.
Have gun will travel.
Did I get that right? I didn't write it down. Is that right?
Yeah. Have laptop will travel. Sure.
I love it.
Instead of have gun will travel.
Thank you for a wonderful talk, and I could listen to you forever. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lily. Great. All right. Well, okay. Thanks so much, Philip. We'll keep everybody apprised when the link is live. Have laptop, will travel, and may it sell many, many copies and bless the world. That sounds like a real winner.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tuttle. Yeah.
Great. All right. We'll look forward to seeing you in next week. Thanks so much, Philip, for all your many efforts. Really appreciate it. Thanks.
Good night.
Yeah, good night. Thanks. Wow, that was really interesting. And so, let's see, I'm looking for... Perfect. Okay, so Dorothy Torrey has just also raised her hand. So, Dorothy, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Will. Can you hear me?
Hi, Dorothy. Yes, I can hear you. How are you?
I'm doing just great here on Cape Cod.
It's so good to hear your voice again. Yeah, I know. We haven't seen you for quite a while. But it's
I
nice
know.
To hear your voice.
And
yeah.
Everything is well here, and I'm so happy to be on this call. I haven't been able to make the others. I did want to comment on the sprouts because there was something that Philip said, and I just want to take it deeper. When he talked about the sprouts and then nature, just doing its thing, in my reading lately, I've been reading about how the sacredness, the sacred is in everything. The divine is in everything. And
right.
So, When I thought about nature doing its thing, I said, "Oh, the divine is doing its thing. The sacredness in these sprouts are doing its thing. The life force is doing its thing. It's so much more. I mean, nature is so magnificent, abundant, almighty. And sometimes when I think about I just wanted to elaborate what nature means to me. You know, it is the sacred.
Oh,
it is. The
thank
divine.
You. Yeah, that's so
it
beautiful. You know, because we tend to forget that sometimes. We think, oh yeah, nature's doing its thing. The sprouts are growing, and the chlorophyll is getting stronger, and there's some minerals, some carbon is adding. You know, it's very mechanistic, the whole thing. We think, oh, it's just it's sort of this mechanistic growing. You get more for your money. And you get more calories and, you know, this whole materialistic, mechanistic kind of view. And a lot of times when we say nature, we just mean that, you know, this sort of natural, it's just natural for it to grow. And carbon dioxide is combined with the water and the sunlight and it gets bigger. So, you know, all right, good. But what you're reminding us, I think also Philip would appreciate this, is that we're talking about an absolute miracle. I mean, something that's, like you say, is so sacred. The life force in these little tiny, enormous intelligence within this packet that knows to go for the light and that we're feeding ourselves with this intelligence. We're feeding ourselves with this beautiful energy of healing and creativity and positive life. And it's almost the complete antithesis of stealing the milk from a mother or confining an animal in his or her own excrement and tormenting them and stabbing them and then eating their flesh. You can't imagine a more completely opposite. This is something where these little beings are giving forth life. And I think, you know, one of the reasons perhaps that animals have so much, especially the herbivore animals, have so much strength. And, you know, think about, you know, elephants and all these animals, antelope and deer and powerful animals who can run and so forth, is that they're eating this life and they're celebrating their lives. And I think that's the beautiful thing. So thanks for kind of...
And then another thing, Will, it's like, and I've been doing more spiritual reading and meditation, and that everything that we need is provided. And here these mung beans, when they sprout, it really shows the abundance of the divine, the abundance that comes out of these little beans, and how they just grow into a beautiful sprout. So everything that we need is truly provided. The right. Abundance of the divine is right in front of my eyes. And
right.
So I just, by the way, if it wasn't for you, Will, I wouldn't be vegan, and it is the best gift I have given myself. I love it, love it, love it. So I just thank you, and please say hello to Madeline and give her my love.
Oh, thanks, Dorothy. Yeah, it's great to hear your voice. I hope to see you again before too long. Sometimes if we ever get back up to the Cape, that would be wonderful.
That would be wonderful.
All right.
Thank
you so much for calling in. Yeah, bless you. Wow, that was very interesting. Okay, if there are any other comments about anything up to this point, you're, of course, always welcome. This is the sort of insider's little call here we're having the third Thursday of every month. Probably next month, I haven't decided exactly yet, I'll let everybody know, but just to let you know, probably next month, March, the third Thursday of March, I probably won't be able to do the call because we're doing a Whirlwind Texas tour, and it's really packed. We're doing at least one, very often two events a day. The time we arrive in Houston on the 14th until we leave, which is right the day we get back from the vegan cruise, until we leave on the 25th. So we'll probably just do it the following week, I think the 28th, if that works for everybody, because we'll be back in California at that point. So, all right. So if anyone has any comments or questions, please go ahead and press *6. There are a few things I would like to talk about here before we call it a night, because there's still some things that I'd like to mention that I think are helpful. One thing that several things that have specifically been asked, so I thought I would address those. One of our good friends has asked, it was the Bodhisattva facilitator has asked, if I could say a little bit about the new initiative, really a campaign, by called the Million Dollar Campaign. I think I've got some information about it somewhere. But anyway, it's let me look it up here. And there's so much is happening. That's, I think, one of the things that's so cool right now is there's just so much happening in our movement. It's going so fast. But this is Matthew Glover, who's the fellow. I'm not sure if you've heard of Matthew Glover, but he's an interesting guy. He's one of the main originators of Veganuary, which was started primarily in England, although it's become international. And he kind of got that going a few years ago, and now he's not involved with that anymore. He's kind of passed it on to other people. But this year they had 275,000 people signed up for Veganuary worldwide, which is to basically go vegan for the month of January. It's an educational campaign. And so it's growing every year by leaps and bounds. It's become one of the most successful, and I think in many ways most successful and talked about campaigns to help promote veganism. And we were in Porto, Portugal, last September at a conference there. And so Matthew was there, and we had dinner with him, talked to him, and so forth. And he was telling us then that he was embarking on a new program, but he didn't want to talk. He wasn't able to talk about it. So this is it. This is what it is. It's this million-dollar campaign, and million-dollar vegan campaign, actually. And the million-dollar vegan campaign, right now, the focus, is, as I understand it, is to try to convince, basically, or to encourage Pope Francis to go vegan for Lent, so to go vegan for 40 days starting next Wednesday. Lent starts on Wednesday and goes for 40 days, as I understand it. So the whole idea is to try to get him to go vegan and to do it publicly and to do it for the reasons that he has talked about. And that's been one of the things that I think is interesting. You know, there's this new film documentary called A Prayer for Compassion by Thomas Jackson, and in that film, I just watched it again last night, it's going to be released, actually premiering on March 5th in New York City, and we're in that film, and there's some really great people are in there, and one of the people is Silas Rao, who talks about how Pope Francis, in his very kind of famous encyclical that he wrote last year, talked in quite the passionate terms about the importance of compassion for animals and really caring for God's creation and for the earth. And then, of course, he goes and comes to New York City, and he eats veal and scallops and all this, you know, animal-based food everywhere he goes, and the whole point is that it doesn't mean a lot when someone says something, but it's kind of an empty, the words are empty, the words are hollow because their actions are belying their words, and that causes just a lot of weakness, really, in the person. It causes a lot of suffering, I think, really, that anytime we have a situation where we're not congruent, you know, where we say we believe one thing but we act in a different way, then it exposes an inauthenticity that erodes our happiness, that erodes our empowerment, that erodes our integrity, and it just sort of sucks the energy away. And so I think that's one of the things that we're seeing in the vegan movement, to try to, the thing I'm working on myself, really, and encouraging all of us, is to try to live what veganism is as best we can, so that our words and our actions and our attitudes are all congruent, that we're speaking in a way that people can feel is authentic. Yes, we're talking about the health benefits and the environmental benefits and the cultural benefits, and that we're embodying those ourselves. So basically, I think it's quite interesting. I mean, I think it's a good idea. $1 million. So the idea is that if he goes vegan for Lent, and there's a petition you can sign, and people are signing it, and they're trying to get 75,000. I think right now there's about 62,000 petitions signers, and trying to get 75,000, and maybe, of course, get more after that. And our really wonderful friend, Genesis Butler, who's, I think she's 12 years old now, and she's the granddaughter or grandniece, something like that, of Cesar Chavez. And she's a really, you all probably have heard of her. She's a very articulate and persistent and fantastic, really, vegan advocate. And so she apparently right now is in Rome at the Vatican trying to meet with him, or at least meet with somebody, a senior, somebody with the church, to present some petitions and to encourage the Pope to please go vegan, for the month, at least for Lent. So what do I think about this whole thing? I think it's always good to try something, you know, and obviously somebody has donated the money, $1 million potentially, which Pope Francis would then, the whole idea is that he would be able to choose which charity he would like to donate this money to if he goes vegan for the month of January, for the period of Lent. So I think it's definitely worth signing and spreading the word about it, because there are 1.2 billion Catholics in the world, and this might help some of these Catholics to sit up and take notice and think that, well, if the Pope is serious enough about this to actually go vegan for Lent publicly, then that's a fantastic thing. Then maybe I should do it too. Maybe I should look into this and try to make a bigger dent, try to, you know, turn the ship around faster. I think it's good to have these efforts. In the March resources, I'll have a link. I have a link in the February resources, which you can read already. In the March resources, there'll be another link of an article by Matthew, which explains the rationale behind the whole thing a little bit more, and the idea is to work with world leaders to try to get them to move and make significant actions and symbolic actions on behalf of veganism. And since he is not worried about being reelected, you know, he's a world leader who doesn't have to worry about being elected, he's less likely to be afraid to make a stand. So there may be truth to that. You know, I think there is, I mean, there's obviously truth to it, but on the other hand, I just feel it in my bones that these people, like the Pope and like the Dalai Lama and other people who are in positions of influence, even though they're not elected by the people, you know, they're sort of somehow appointed. There's a system in place that puts them there, and they still are very sensitive to people around them. So it's his choice. He can do it. I do think that a lot of cardinals and bishops and other high-ranking church officials are going to be disapproving of him doing this, because it'll make them kind of look bad, and from their point of view, it'll cause all kinds of potential divisions and consternation, and $1 million to the Catholic Church is really a tiny drop in the bucket. So for him to take a risk for a few pennies, I have to say, I think it's really a long shot, quite honestly. But on the other hand, it may be, if there are enough people signing on, and he feels that there's really a strong support for this, then maybe his own spiritual integrity will actually kick in, which would be great, you know, and he will say, all right, I'm going to do it. You know, there's that, Lily reminded me the other, I think at one point, of the Brother, Son, Sister, Moon film, where the Pope, Innocent, is deeply touched by Francis, even though they all wanted all the other church leaders at the time, the privileged patriarchs and bishops and so forth, just wanted to get rid of Francis. The Pope himself had the spiritual depth and integrity to recognize what Francis actually was doing and who he was. And so maybe we have a similar situation. So that's all good. So good for them for making this opportunity. And like I say, I think the main thing I really feel is important is to all of us to just be as creative as we can to find, and for each one of us to work on the passion that we have to help spread this message, whatever that is, whether it's doing something like this, creating a petition for the Pope to get him to sign it, or teaching vegan cooking classes in your community, Yeah, there's so many things we can do, and coaching people and writing and making videos and who knows what, or like Lily did for many years, for quite a few years, you know, having a World Peace Tide Sunday, and like Philip is doing, you know, writing a book and traveling. There's always something, I think, when we look into our own inner wisdom that we can contribute. So thank you for that question, and I really think it's a good cause to support, and but there are many, obviously many different good causes that we can support here, and so find one, you know, find ones that you feel are good. The vegan movement has just boomed so much. I actually got from our good friend Sharon Abar, she just sent me a link to a website, Vegan for Lent, who is apparently a friend of hers, who's doing a woman named Joy, I guess, who is you know, just creating this whole Go Vegan for Lent movement, and that's another great. I mean, what a great thing, you know. So that's another possibility for us to get behind something, and it's kind of connected to this, getting the Pope to go vegan for Lent, or we can go vegan for Lent. And my sister is reminding me, actually, because she and some of the other people, like her daughter, who's a vegan, my niece Christy, have gotten very interested in the Orthodox Christian faith. And they say that for them, going vegan for Lent, that's what they all do anyway, basically. Even people who aren't vegan, you know, that's considered kind of standard procedure. You don't eat any meat, very little or no dairy, and that's very, I think that's very interesting. So that's the Orthodox side, the Eastern Orthodox, and then the Western Roman Catholic. Perhaps the Russian, the head of the Orthodox Church, who's Russian, would be willing to go vegan. He would be just ready to do it because he does it anyway. And not so many people, but it's still a very large movement. The Greek Orthodox, there's so many different branches of that that are all kind of connected. All right, and then there was another kind of interesting thing I just wanted to say a few words about, which is I got a few questions from a woman who's just wanted to get some clarification for herself on some fundamental vegan issues that she has people asking her about. So I thought I would just address those here too. And let me just double check. Yeah, so the questions are, first of all, in terms of the environmental issues of animal agriculture, you know, what are the really most devastating aspects of it? And I think there's quite a bit of, I think a little bit over, from my point of view, a little bit of overemphasis perhaps on climate change. I think climate change is huge, of course, but I think it tends to become like all or nothing climate change. And whereas climate change is one aspect of a multi-dimensional environmental catastrophe that animal agriculture is causing, and some of these other things really are serious. So I mean, from my point of view, like rainforest destruction is huge. Cutting down, we're now, especially with this new president of Brazil, we're talking about already an acre per second being cut down to grow soy primarily, or to graze cattle. This is a direct attack on the lungs of the earth and on the genetic diversity and of the planet. And that coupled with the attack on the oceans, overfishing, I just read, I think a couple of days ago, that now the oceanographers are saying by 2030, basically all commercial fishing will be over. Fish will all have, right now it's about two-thirds of the fish we're catching are factory farmed. By then it'll be virtually 100% will have to be factory farmed. eating corn and soy and other fish that are factory farmed. The oceans are being completely destroyed by the pollution of animal agriculture, the runoff, and by the overfishing, by the complete bycatch. You know, just the absolute attack on the oceans. So these two things, to me, should not be sort of neglected in favor of climate change, and also water depletion. Water depletion, water pollution, air pollution, these are gigantic issues that animal agriculture is directly causing. And so that's one thing I'm a little bit disagreeing with the overemphasis on climate change, because climate change is so politicized, and these other things are not politicized because they're just absolute facts, and you can't question it. And they're extremely critical of the loss of genetic diversity, the mass extinction of species, the devastation of our water resources when water is so precious. Animal agriculture uses just 80% of freshwater use is for irrigating crops and animal agriculture. So this is something that's completely unsustainable at this point. And water is becoming more expensive in many ways than even petroleum. So that's what I would say. You know, I think it's important to talk about that. And then the question that people still get, which I think is kind of a comical question in a way, but you know, what would we do to all the domesticated animals if they were no longer needed? You know, that basic question is sort of like, if everybody went vegan, cows would take over the earth. People still have that question, you know, what would we do with all these animals if everybody would be? So I really think it's important to embrace these questions, you know, embrace that question and say, what a great question. I love that question. And just talk about it. Gosh, if everybody stopped eating animals, then we could stop breeding animals. That's right there says it. If we stopped eating them, then we would stop breeding them. And if we stopped breeding them, then we could stop feeding them. So it all rhymes, eating, breeding, and feeding. And so if we stop eating them, we can stop breeding them. If we stop breeding them, we can stop feeding them. If we stop feeding them, then we can stop cutting down rainforest an acre per second and growing all these genetically engineered corn and soy and alfalfa, all these monocrop fields, this massive devastation of ecosystems would no longer be necessary. We could allow the rivers and forests and rainforests and prairies to all heal and come back. Wildlife could come back. So it's just a beautiful scenario that would unfold. We could allow the healing of our earth, of our ecosystems the oceans could heal, the aquifers could heal, the species now that don't have any habitat would have habitat again. There's really just a brand new, oh, it's a study I just read, here it is. I think it's Dr. Joseph Poor, from the University of Oxford, he's talking about how 75% of the land, think of that, 75% of the land right now that is enslaved to agriculture, just, you know, growing huge quantities of corn, soy, and other grains for animals, could go back to forests again, or could go back to prairie, could go back to being habitat, go back to being nature. I mean, this is enormously positive. It's such a great news. Really helped us, you know, from the rooftops. And then the other question that we hear quite a bit, the third final one, is how could a vegan lifestyle be economically sustainable with people who don't make a lot of money? You know, again, first of all, I mean, it's always good to remember that animal agriculture is the most heavily subsidized industry in the United States. It's massively subsidized by billions of dollars. Meat would cost, you know, a burger would cost, according to some studies, closer to $30, $35, $40 if it wasn't subsidized. Milk and dairy are massively subsidized. They would be much more expensive. Fruits and vegetables are not subsidized at all. In fact, organic fruits and vegetables and grains are penalized because they have to, you know, farmers have to spend a lot of money to get certified. So here we are in a situation where the healthiest foods are the most penalized. Unhealthiest foods are the most subsidized. So healthy plant-based foods would be the least expensive to grow. Growing grains, growing legumes, growing vegetables, fruits,
nuts and seeds, these are relatively low input. You can grow a lot. You can grow 50,000 pounds of potatoes on an acre of land, or like 150 pounds of beef, right? So, I mean, how can you compare the price per pound when it takes that much land, water, petroleum? It takes, you can grow so much more food for people. And like 40,000 pounds of wheat, around 50,000 pounds of tomatoes and so forth. So we're talking about four, just many, many orders of magnitude of efficiency. So if we weren't subsidizing these foods, and then think of the terrible health costs from the diseases, I mean, that's much more expensive. So it's really vastly inexpensive. And we have books like eating vegan on $4 a day that just show the practicality, even with the terrible system that we have, where there's no subsidies at all for the healthy foods, even with that case, we can still eating diets that are centered on vegetables and grains and nuts and seeds and beans, we can eat quite inexpensively. Sprouting is also quite inexpensive. If we have a little garden, we can grow our own food. That's, as the old saying goes, that's like printing money. You know, growing your own food. So I think the good news is that on every level, if we're willing to eat less processed vegan foods, which is really the healthy, the whole food plant-based diet. That's the whole thing. WFPB. Everybody says. I was with this guy the other day in Ocala, and his license plate is WFPB. He says, Mr. Whole Food Plant-Based. But, eating a whole food plant-based diet is a fantastic foundation for our health and for the Earth's health and for our pocketbook, for the financial aspect, too, because it's just much simpler. The inputs are much less. It's going to cost less. And we can buy in the bulk section of the grocery store. We can buy online. Like, we buy all our rice online from Lotus Rice, because I think it's important to do it if you are sensitive. Madeline is quite sensitive to all the arsenic in rice, and so we don't buy rice just even if it's organic, because it's grown in the United States, it has arsenic in it, and we find that when we buy Lotus Rice, you can buy it online, it's not expensive, and it's grown in countries where they never used arsenic in the soil, so it's just much healthier. So it's kind of a learning curve, learning to really understand the devastating impact of non-organic foods. I think, really, quite honestly, one of the things we should really be willing to do is pay a little bit more for organic, because if it's not organic, in many ways it's not vegan, because the pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, and chemical fertilizers that are used in commercial plant agriculture, even though it's vastly better than eating animal-based foods, still killing birds and bees and butterflies and insects and fishes and so forth from the runoff, and we don't want to be eating chemicals. There was just a study done. I just watched this little video about organic, and they found it was quite interesting. It was like four families. I think one family from Atlanta, Minneapolis, Baltimore, and somewhere else, and they ate for 6 weeks. One week they ate organic. The next week they ate non-organic. The next week they ate organic, then non-organic. And they just tested the amount of pesticides in their urine, and it was huge difference. I mean, it was a good, gigantic difference of 60, 70, 80% less pesticides in their bodies when they ate organic. So it really makes a big difference, and these pesticides directly contribute to cancer, to many forms of neurotoxic diseases that are quite prevalent now, as well as autoimmune diseases and gland, endocrine disrupting diseases, and so forth. So to eat a plant-based diet that's whole food and also organic is actually the foundation. It's, in the long run, it's far less expensive. When we're healthy, when we're contributing to a healthier world, it's in the long run, it's worth it. And I think we should really understand that. It does make a big difference. And, of course, the veganic is really the the standard that we should be shooting for, not to use any bone meal or blood meal or manure, and we're finding that this is starting to happen more and more. This is, again, we have a long way to go, but this is the way forward. All right, so thank you, everyone, for allowing me to speak a little bit about these issues. And I'm thinking at this point, if there aren't, let me know if you have any question or a comment or anything about what I've been saying. I wanted to cover those things. I wanted to end maybe a couple of minutes earlier. It's now about 20 minutes past the hour, so we usually start winding down about now. And I do want to bring to your attention the resources for February. And notice the quote at the top of February's resources. This is from Brother, Son, Sister Moon from the movie Pope Innocent III says to St. Francis. I talked about this earlier. He says this. So when Pope Innocent sort of suddenly gets it about what St. Francis is all about, he says, God has given you a great gift. The gift to approach him through his beloved creatures. Think of that. I mean, that is so profound. God has given you a great gift. Gift to approach him through his beloved creatures. We can all approach the infinite sacred spirit of life through the expressions of that life. How else can we? And they're all around us, and they're so beautiful. Today we were just marveling at the beautiful birds here on this little pond here in Florida, and the celebration of life that's going on all around us. These sandhill cranes are trumpeting away, and two little babies are there, and the mother and the father are protecting them, and it's just the most beautiful loyalty that they have for each other and to their babies. If we could live as sanely, as clearly, and as forthrightly as these animals are living, just harmonizing themselves with each other and the environment and fulfilling their purposes. And that's really the thing, you know, for us as human beings to discover our purpose and to live, like Pope Innocent says, to approach the divine or the unconditioned source of life through the beloved creatures, the beloved expressions of this life. They can teach us so much. And Immanuel Kant, you know, he's a beautiful philosopher, one of the real pioneers of Western philosophy. And I remember reading some of his stuff. but he says, he who is cruel to animals becomes hard also in his dealings with men. We can judge the heart of a man by his treatment of animals. You know, this is something very similar to what St. Francis actually said. So these are important things. So we do have in the resources, we've got quite a few interviews, video and audio interviews that we did over the last month. Some of them are really good. Calling All Vegans is really interesting. Rabbi Shmuley Lankowitz from Phoenix is amazing. We did a really very interesting and powerful interview with him. And then, the lecture in Ocala the other day. Madeline just did another Intuitive Kitchen. It's making oat milk. We did that in the RV kitchen. You can watch that on YouTube. And then there's some great, just as usual, there's just so many, so much good news, things happening. And some of the things are not such good news, but mostly it's a lot of good news or good information to be aware of. So you can just look through that. This Green New Deal has been proposed, and I just have the actual legislation that they'll be apparently discussing, if you wanted to see what it actually is. And it's definitely, I think, got a lot of good things in it, at least from the point of view of animal agriculture, reducing the impact of animal agriculture. And the many benefits of veganic gardening, and Dr. Michael Clapper's wisdom, and just a whole lot of things. I won't go through all. You can see, but like Lancet's
Lancet, which is, as you all know, a very reputable journal, scientific medical journal. I now have a planetary health diet. They had an article on planetary health, not just our own health, but planet, and of course, recommending a plant-based diet. And so anyway, there's quite a few, many more things, lots of great things happening. We're just delighted to be able to be part of this movement. And we close this with the little sign here in front of the church. Roast beef dinner, October 13th. Blessing of the animals, October 7th. So that's the basic disconnect we often have. But thank you all so much for joining with us in the Wilpy Side Circle and on this call. And if there's any, nobody's raised their hand, nobody's pressed star 6. I know that we have a lot of great things happening that you're doing, and we're looking forward to continuing the conversation next month. Just so to let everybody know, since the last call we had in Sedona, we went from there. We met our friends, Judy, Carmen, Judy and Michael, and we did. There was a veg fest in Sedona that I spoke at, and then Madeline and I met Judy down in Tucson. We did some lectures there, also quite a few in Phoenix, and then we went to Southern California and did a presentation in Palm Springs, and then since then we've flown to Atlanta, done things in Atlanta and Athens and Tallahassee, Gainesville, Ocala, and now we're going to be starting up tomorrow, and it's a real whirlwind because it's you can go to our website and see, but basically Bonita and Naples, Tampa, Sun City Center, and then West Palm Beach, Manalapan, and Miami in Southern Florida, and then the Vegan Cruise, which is going to leave on the 3rd. And I think there are a few people from the World Peace Diet facilitators who are going on the cruise, which looks like it's a 6-week affair, and this year is it's a 6-day affair. This year it's a 12-day affair. So we'll be busy. I think we're doing about 13 events on that cruise, pretty much one every day. And then as soon as we come back from that, we're flying to Texas for that tour till the end of the month. So we'll look forward to talking to you at the end of next month. We also have 2 new books, I guess you're aware of, that are just out, and I don't know how to launch books anymore. they're out anyway. One book just came out. It's called Veg Inspiration, Daily Veg Inspirations, Jewels from the World Peace Diet. So basically we have an excerpt from the World Peace Diet, one for every day of the year. So starting January 1st, going all the way through December 31st, one for every day of the year with little Zen art by Madeline all the way through the entire book. She studied this in Japan and did lots of animals, beautiful little animals and landscapes and plants and things, Zen art. So it's a nice book. If you want to have just a daily inspiration from the World Peace Diet, we have that book. Has just been released. We just finished it up. And then the other book is called Buddhism and Veganism, Essays Connecting Spiritual Awakening and Animal Liberation. And I'm the editor of that book, and I chose 20 other vegan Buddhists in all the different traditions, Tibetan Buddhism, Vipassana, Zen, and virtually all the main lineages, and they talk about the importance of veganism and Buddhism, how it goes together. We have some authors from China, also from the United States, some from Europe, and so that's being published by Vegan Publishers. And I have not yet got the book in my hands, but on Saturday or Friday actually, tomorrow, we'll actually get the first books. So we'll be able to start shipping those out, or you can already order it, I think, on Amazon if you're interested. Should be, I think, hopefully we'll get this dialogue going on how Buddhism and veganism really support each other. I can talk a lot about that. But anyway, so that's it for now. We've come to the end of our time. My sister goes to bed early, and she's teaching school tomorrow.
And so I promised you I wouldn't go on too long here. So I'd like to wrap it up here and really just thank all of you for your many efforts and send our love. And Madeline's right here now, and she sends her love to you as well. And my dear 90-year-old vegan mother, still smiling and doing well. And that's a whole other thing to talk about, aging and how do we do that anyway? Wow, it's challenging for sure. But I think love is the answer to all these things, and love and patience and understanding, and a vegan diet really helps a lot. So I send my love to all of you, and Evelyn does too, and we look forward to talking to you next time. I think I see there is, I just noticed a couple of comments. Let me just do it quickly here. Nancy, did you have something?
Hi,
Nancy. Yes.
Sorry, hi. I'll try to be really quick.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
I just did. I forgot how to do it, and then when you said I didn't see anybody star six, I went, oh, that's how you did. So I'll try to be really quick. I think that how do I address this? This healthism, I saw this online. In vegan advocacy, I think is really important, but I also think it can end up working against us, because my concern is I want people to stop eating animals. And if we promote only the super healthy way, very, very few people will do that. And, like, I'm organizing this Vegan Burger Smackdown. It is not a health event, but there's going to be really healthy food there, but there's also going to be an Impossible Burger and maybe a Beyond Meat Burger. And a whole range of things, you know, and I just feel like, here, you guys want to eat me here, have an Impossible Burger, you know what I mean? Stop eating animals. And then we can, you know, lead it gently along, you know, But I think it becomes a big rift in the vegan community, because there was already people making comments like, well, what about soy? And I don't like this, and I don't like that. And I'm like, geez, you know, if we take away everything, we'll end up with lettuce and celery, and then it'll be like a vegan juice smackdown, which is not a bad idea, you know. And the other issue I have like a serious kind of freak out about cruises, because we know how devastating the oceans are, and I didn't know if that was something we could address. Certainly not on this call, because you're out of time. But anyway.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. This particular cruise line is the best that at least I've looked into it. They're really very. They really minimize their footprint, and it's all vegan. So, but yeah, you know, we could just boycott it. But then it seems like it's a great way to get people to. I've seen a lot of people go vegan on these cruises. So, anyway, but that is another. Oh yeah. Mostly people that come are not vegan. No, they're just kind of curious, and then they learn. They, you know, just all lectures the whole time, and great food.
Yeah. Oh well. Okay. Well, that's good, but I usually am pretty against cruises to begin with, you know, because I mean, they could have them on land. You could just, everybody has to meet at a certain place to board the ship, and you could just, I mean, the oceans are just, it's such a bad shape, you know, and so anyway, I'm sure you understand that, but that's all I wanted to.
No, I do. Yeah,
so
I know.
It's a slippery slope, because especially with healthism, it's certainly, you know, really important that we know what the healthiest thing is. I mean, obviously, but I just don't see, I seem to be like 1% of the population being able to really follow that, you know, like this, in Baltimore, and I'll try to be quick, I know that we have the Land of Kush, and they're a vegan soul restaurant, and it's not whole food plant-based. Some of the stuff is, but they're serving such an extraordinary need in that community, because people that come in there would normally be eating fried chicken and fried this and cheese. And you know, they're taking people and giving them vegan options of the foods that they know, and doing such an extraordinary service that way, you know.
I think there's a place for that. Yeah, I think there's a place for that.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. Okay. Thanks, Nancy.
All right. Thank you so much.
Take care. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
And one last
thing. Okay, I'll be quick.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask the question. You kept saying, we'll see you next month, but I think I heard you say, you're not doing this call next month.
Okay, so to clarify, we are going to do it next month. I'm just looking at the calendar, and the only day we could do it would be the following week. So we could do it the following week.
Oh, so you are going to actually do it in March.
We could do it on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I think, why don't we just do it on Thursday, since that's what we're used to. Instead of being the third Thursday, it'll be the fourth Thursday in March. So it'll be the 28th.
Okay.
Thursday.
I heard that you weren't doing it at all next month. That's what I heard.
Right.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Thanks for checking on that. Yeah. Okay.
Thanks.
Great. So we'll see everybody on the 28th. All right. Thank you so much, everyone. And much love to you all. And here's a little closing short piece of music. Just a... go out on our inner sanctum. Thank you again. Bless you.